Hi, I'm Yvette, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm sober by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for that I'm truly grateful. Thank you for all those who took cakes. I think I was here, and the last time I was speaking, and Ski took a cake, and I'm like, wow, cool, I'm here again. So congratulations to all of you and to the 90 days, you know. That's really awesome. If you're new, just know that you don't have to take another drink again if you follow the simple suggestions we have in here. I am really nervous. And I got some really good suggestions. One of them, I was like, no, I don't think I'm going to do that. I was told to look at you guys like you're all naked. I'm like, no. No. You know, this has already been an interesting meeting. I was hustled by a little girl to get cookies. Yeah, I did that. Yeah. And I'm kidding because I know this little girl very well. So, yes, she is my niece. Well, I started drinking when I was 11 years old. And when I started drinking, my sisters all drank. And I was very confused with what was going on in my family. Because my father was an alcoholic, my mom was not, and I used to go and spend summers with my dad. And my dad was coming from Wyoming to pick me up, and he got as far as Las Vegas and called my mom, and he was drunk. So she told him he couldn't come and pick me up. And, you know, I had the whole summer planned. I was taking a girlfriend from school, and I was all excited about the trip, and, you know, I'm Native American. I was taking her back to my reservation, and, you know, I was just really something really proud that I was doing with a friend of mine. And when my mom said I couldn't go, I didn't understand it. You know, it's like my dad was an alcoholic ever since I can remember, so what's so different now? And I did not understand that. Today I understand it. You know, she was protecting me. But at the time, it was like, no, I want to go with Dad, you know. And so I was very disappointed, and I was very embarrassed. And I had to tell my friend she couldn't go, we weren't going. And that night I went out and got drunk for the first time. And when I drank from that first time, I drank to get drunk. I hated the taste of alcohol. I did not like it, but boy, did I love the effects. You know, and then I just kind of started hanging out with my sister. And we used to, we were 11, 12 years old. And we used to hang out at the corner and by the liquor store and wait for somebody to come along and buy us alcohol. And then we would go on a bridge that went over the freeway. And this was my sister's rule that we had to finish the quart of beer before even going out. And I hated the taste. I hated the taste of beer. Even at the end of my drinking disease, I hated the taste, especially of beer. And, you know, I would just guzzle it down because I knew we wouldn't get to the dance or we wouldn't get to wherever we were going to until we finished that. And so I would guzzle it down and then it got to the point where my friends didn't want to go out with me anymore. You know, we would start going out and I would be the one drunk. And they wouldn't, you know, I guess they were social drinkers. It's like, you know, at being a teenager. And I remember one time a girlfriend of mine, I had went out and got wasted, and it was in the morning, and I woke up, and I had a really bad hangover. And she called me, and she wanted to go to the dance that night. And she says, Yvette, come on, let's go to the dance. I said, okay. And I told her, I said, you know what, I went out last night. Let me throw up to get this alcohol off my stomach, and I'll be ready to go again. And, you know, since I've been sober, I've had an opportunity to look at that, because when I came in the rooms and got sober, I was not an alcoholic. You know, you could not convince me that I was an alcoholic. I had a lot of other problems, you know, and alcohol was just not one of them, and mostly because my dad was an alcoholic, and I'd be damned if I was going to be like my dad, even though I loved him, you know, loved him a lot, but I was not an alcoholic. And then I got pregnant, and I had two kids by the age of 17, and started using a lot of drugs, and, you know, just went through the whole lifestyle of that. Wow. I brought my kids up through my disease, you know, and something I'm not very proud of. I learned very early in sobriety the difference between being ashamed and feeling guilty. And I didn't know the difference. And somebody had came into the treatment center that I was in and said, when you feel guilty, it's because you've done something wrong. When you feel ashamed, it's because you feel like you're something wrong. And I came in here feeling like I was something wrong. Growing up in school, I never felt like, and that's why I just love the effects of alcohol, because I never felt like I belonged. And I used to hang around with my sisters. They were all older than me. And so I was always in the in crowd, but I always felt outside of that crowd. And, it was crazy when I was a teenager. I used to go to house parties and by myself. And because I knew there would be alcohol there, and I would just show up. And, you know, and these were like people that were in high school that I would end up at their parties, and they'd be like, who's this little girl? You know, like me, you know, and they wouldn't let me go home. They would make me stay there because I was too drunk. And so they would let me stay there on their couch, and, you know, that's what I did, you know. And we were talking tonight, and I was saying, you know, I wasn't a bully when I was young, and I just hated bullies, and I used to stick up for girls, and I used to be out wandering the streets. I grew up in Santa Barbara, and they have a Fiesta Days there, and it lasts for like a week, and really, it's a whole party week, and I would be walking around just drinking, hanging out by myself. I was very much a loner. Probably because nobody really wanted to hang around with me, because I would get drunk and I would get sloppy drunk and I wouldn't be able to walk, and, you know, just a real sloppy, sloppy drunk. But remember, I'm not an alcoholic. And I used to walk around town, and I remember one night this girl was getting jumped by a bunch of other girls, and I stopped and I went and helped her. And, you know, it was really cool to hear that she remembered. I didn't remember that. I mean, I've been sober for a little while, and I heard from my sisters that she told them that she knew me and I had helped her out one day. You know, and that's just, you know, I guess I've always had a good heart. I've always wanted to help people. And, you know, life just got crazy after that. I dropped out of school, and I had my kids, and always continued to drink alcohol. Alcohol was my escape. I you know, because of things that happened to me when I was a child, I already knew how to not be present. And when I drank, I didn't have to use my own ability to do that. The alcohol helped me to escape. And, you know, and a lot of it was fun. I had a lot of fun. I used to go to, I started... Boy, I used to do some crazy stuff. I decided I wanted to go to college, and I had my kids, and I was in Wyoming, and I went in, and I cheated on the GED to get into college, because I know how to be a cheat, liar, and thief, you know. I just fell right into it. And that college town was so fun. I went to Indian Junior College in Kansas, Lawrence, Kansas, and ladies' night would start on Thursday, and I wouldn't stop. I kept going every night, and if you ever drank with a bunch of Native Americans, it would get pretty crazy. You know, a fight was always breaking out, you know, and I was in a bar, and nothing but Native Americans in there, and got in a hassle with this girl, and it turned into a big old bar brawl. And, you know, I mean, I was in there fighting guys, and they were throwing me on the ground and getting pool sticks, and it was really crazy. And they 86'd me from the bar, and the only thing was that I was worried about is, do I get to come back tomorrow? And the guy said, yeah, just get out of here for now, you know. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that stuff. That was fun to me, you know, to go out and just get drunk and crazy. That was just fun. I ended up, you know, I would leave, just decide to get up and go. I was in Kansas, I went to Texas, I'd end up back in Santa Barbara, and I came here to San Diego, and I think I was like 17 years old, 17 maybe, going on 18. And that's when I was first introduced to drugs. And, well, it really, really got crazy. And I know this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, but part of my story—that's part of my story—and to be true to myself, I need to let you guys know that. And you know, life really got crazy. I had no control over my disease. I ended up homeless with my kids. Wow, it was just crazy. I think I'll just let you know some significant things that tells you a little bit about me, if that didn't already. But two really life, I don't know how to say it, but geez, right now I don't even remember in what succession it went in. But one of them that was really devastating to me was, see, when I really got in my disease, I did a lot of things, and to support myself and my children, you know, I would be out on the streets, and you know, I was out on the streets, and this man picked me up, and he asked me if I was the lady of the night, and I felt like that was a compliment. You know, I really did. I was like, wow, you know, that sounds really nice, because what I was living was not nice. You know, it was just not not nice. And when he said that, I was like, yeah, and, you know, I kind of picked my head up a little bit. Well, needless to say, I ended up in Las Colinas that night. And I still think it sounds nice to describe that as a lady of the night. It could be put in a lot of different words. That's a really nice way to put it. And I could laugh about that. But one of the worst things that happened is I had my kids with me, and I was moving. I was going from motel to motel, and making the money by the day and paying the motel at night, and just, you know, ripping and running the streets. And when I got arrested another time, I was staying in a motel, and I was out there trying to get the money to pay the night's rent, and I got arrested, and my kids were at the motel. And they sat on a brick wall on Out Home Boulevard until the cops came and picked them up. And you know, that's just, I didn't know how to be responsible. I didn't know how to take care of my kids. And I was trying to do the best I could with what I knew how. And their father came and picked him up. And I was in Las Colinas, and I was there for a couple of days, and I knew their father was coming to pick him up, and I was so relieved. I was so relieved, because I knew I didn't have to take responsibility for my children anymore. You know, and ladies, I understand when you give up your kids, you know, when you ask somebody to take them. You know, I wasn't that smart. You know, they had to be taken from me. And, you know, and it just got crazy, even crazier after that. Because I would just end up in jail, and I ended up in El Centro, and making money through selling drugs. And my youngest son was with me then. And before that happened, I had went to prison for a while, and You know, I didn't. Well, you know, it's almost like when you're living in an alcoholic family, you don't know the right thing from the wrong thing, you know, and you just do what's right in front of you. And I was locked up in Phoenix, Arizona, and, wow, there was some people used to come out and do a sweat lodge. And I was like, wow, I always wanted to do that. And so I started going over there, and I started doing the sweat lodges with the Native Americans over there and the ladies that would go in there, and it was just a really neat experience. And one of my friends got some weed in, and, hey, what a better place to do it is over at the sweat lodge because nobody went over there. You know, and that's like going into a church and doing that, you know. I didn't know any better. Yeah. Thank God I found a loving God who forgives me for the stuff I just did not know. Yeah. And so when I got out of there, I got my kids back, and well, my youngest son, and he lived with me, and you know, I wanted my oldest son to come back, and he came to visit me, and you know, I was already back drinking. I was already back right where I had left off at, and this was a year and a half later. So if you think you can go out and drink again, guess what? We get to go right back where we were, and that's where I was. I was right back there. And my son came to visit me, my oldest son. And I asked him to come home, and he said, no, I don't want to. And, you know, once again, I was like, wow. And I could have exercised my parents' rights and made him come home, but I couldn't do that to him because I knew the lifestyle I was living, and I really didn't see any way out of it. And so I let him go back up there, and he has family up north, so he's been up there ever since. And you know, it was a year after that I finally got sober, because I was in El Central just doing the same things that I did here. And and I remember getting raided, and the cops took me to jail, and I bailed out, and a week later they came back again, and I went to jail again, and they said, we're going to keep coming back. You keep doing the same thing, we're going to keep coming back. And they did. They kept coming back. You know, like I kept ending up back in jail. And my probation officer wanted me to go to a treatment center, and I, of course, did not want to go. You know, I had, because if I wasn't around the streets, I would find a man to support me, and I had a husband at that time, and who I thought was a very good, well, he was a very good financial provider, and he took care of me and my kids, and and when him and I split up, I was working in his father's store, and I used to go in there and steal money from him on a daily basis. I'd go in there and steal Western boots, and I'd steal money, and the bad person that I was, we used to go in there in the mornings, and he would punch in the security code, and, you know, open up the store, and I stood behind him, and so I got the security code, and I used to, so I'd go in there like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning to steal. And I remember one night I was in there, and I was back at the register, and it's a long hallway, and I was taking what I thought I had a right to. You know, that's how I justified what I did, because I felt like I had a right to that. That was my husband and all we had been through, that I had a right to take that, and I didn't. But at that time, that was my thinking. So I was in there to try to taking money out of the cash register. And I looked up, and when I looked at the doors, I seen lights, you know, red lights, you know. I said, oh, there's the cops. Oh, no, am I in trouble now? You know, how am I going to explain this? Number one, I'm not supposed to have the key, and I'm not supposed to have the security code. And my heart just dropped, and I kind of ducked behind the counter there. And I was just sitting there going, you know, what am I going to do? You know, what am I going to do? I can't even run. And when I looked up, it was a street sweeper out there. And I was so relieved. I was like, oh, thank you, God, you know. And it just wasn't time for me to get sober yet, you know, really. You know, I had a little bit more, I had a little bit of ways to go before I reached my bottom. And him and I ended up splitting up because of what I was doing. You know, his father told him he needed to choose between me and the store. And he told me I needed to move out. And he put me up in a motel. There I am, back at the motels. Yeah. And I didn't have money to pay it because I was working in the store, and I wasn't working in the store anymore. And I was like, dang, I don't want to go back out into the streets. I don't want to. El Central's so small. I knew everybody in the town would know what I was doing. And I remember it was Thanksgiving, and my sister was with me. And we went to a church because we didn't have any money, and he paid for the first month, and the first month was up, and we had no money. And the rent was due in about a week. And so we went to a church. Mind you, I didn't do church when I was little either, you know, but I went to this church, and they gave us some enchiladas. You know, and I was so grateful for that, but I was not ready to start going to their church because they gave me enchiladas. You know, I just wasn't ready to do that. And I ended up leaving there and running from there and running back to here to San Diego because I knew I could hide here. You know, and I was running out. By that time, I was on probation, and I was running. And when we moved there, we had some 10-unit apartments that we owned in El Central, and we lost that. The guy that owned that, he held the title, and we had money. I wasn't even a part of the whole financial situation. You know, I just took the money. You know, so he called me in there because my name was on the title, and he said, "Your husband walked away from it. He doesn't want anything to do with it." He said, "And I'm here to offer you $1,500. I took it. I took it. I was running from probation. I had nowhere else to go, and I took $1,500 for, you know, and that's just what I did. If it was available, you know, that instant gratification. And so I ended up back here in San Diego running the streets, and I came back here in June, and I got sober in October 17th of 1995 is my sobriety date. My home group is a great fat group, Thursday night. Yeah, a lot of you guys are here. Thank you for supporting me. And when I got sober, I had to hit a bottom that there was no doubt that it was my bottom. God had to show me what I did in life. And what I was continuing to do, and the destruction that I did, my last drink was that night. And I had a spiritual awakening. God stepped into my life, and I asked him to help me like I had never asked God to help me before. And I just said, "Please help me." Now, I had been to one or two meetings in El Central, and I don't even know what 12-step program it was. But I remember hearing in there, they said, "Turn your life over to God and help somebody else." And that stuck with me. And that night that I took my last drink and I had that slight moment of clarity and that breakdown to where I was just crying for 2 hours because I got to see everything that I had did in life. And, I was just very shameful of it. And I said, "God, help me. Because I don't know what to do. I don't know how to be sober." And from that point, God stepped into my life, and he hasn't left me alone since. You know, I went into a treatment center, and how I ended up there, I don't know. You know, it was through God, because I asked him to help me. And I went down to detox, trying to get into detox. And this is how much denial I was in. I didn't come out of the denial that I was an alcoholic until I was in the room sober for about 7 years. Before I admitted I had a problem with alcohol. And When I went down to detox, they were looking at me like I was crazy because I looked pretty bad. I had one eye that wandered. I was missing teeth. And, you know, I was probably about 90 pounds, half of what I am now. Yeah. And they told me I needed to get a medical clearance before they would let me in there. And I tried to make it up to UCSD and couldn't make it. I got on the bus. Now, mind you, I've been in San Diego since I was 17 years old, and I got on that bus, and next thing I knew, I was at the beach. Like, how did that happen? And I was scared. I was so scared because I could not get myself up to UCSD. And when so I said, I'm going to walk. So I walked up there, and they sent me to, well, when I thought detox told me to go to urgent care. And so when I got there, I asked them where urgent care was, and they said, oh, it's up on the second floor. Go up there and go through this door. And when I went through that door, it locked. It's like, oh, shit, I'm in trouble now. They're going to throw away the key. This is a setup, you know. This is really a setup. They know who I am. You know, the game's over. And all what went through my mind was, okay, I've seen movies. What do they ask you? Who's the president? Who's the vice president? What day it is? I didn't know what date it was. And I didn't know who the vice president was, and I didn't know who the president was. And I said, oh, shit. And here's my fear, you know, because I've been locked up before, but I had never been to an asylum. So I'm like, oh, no. You know, I was not looking forward to that. And so I went up to the counter, and I told them I'm here to get a medical clearance, and they said, you're in the wrong place. Thank you, God. And they unlocked the door for me, and I ended up back at detox trying to get in. They didn't believe me that I went up there. They asked me what kind of game I was running because, you know, that's what we do. And that's what I look like, and that's what they expected of me. And I said, I'm not running no game. This is really what happened, and I'm just trying to get sober, and I have no place to go. Please help me. And they said to keep calling, you know, to keep every morning keep calling. And I ended up in this meeting. I looked very different than what I look today. You know, I was, you know, this man that I was with asked me when I was going to drop the prison attitude. And I thought I had, and that really hurt my feelings, you know. And I was like, wow, I still hold it. And that's my goal in life today, is to just be a lady, you know. And I found Alcoholics Anonymous and found who I am in Alcoholics Anonymous at the Great Fact Group on Thursday night at 8 o'clock right across the street from the Grossmont College High School. When I first went there, I was going to get speakers for another 12-step program, and somebody had to tell me, what are you doing, you know? And I was like, oh, this isn't the right thing to do, you know? And so I ended the sponsorship that I had with this lady, and I found another lady that opened up the book and said, Yvette, you need to find yourself in this book. And you're going to start at the forwards, and you're going to find yourself. Highlight everything that applies to you. I had never opened I had read the book, but I never looked at the forewords. I never, even when I read a book, I didn't look at the forewords. What was that good for? I wanted to get to the meat of the things, you know, the whole book. And to me, that was chapter one. And so when I started reading the foreword, I found myself. I found out that I'm an alcoholic. And when I drink, I change, you know. My thinking changes, my behaviors change. Everything about me changes when I drink. And she also told me to get off the fence. You know, you need to find yourself and get off the fence. And I shared, you know, I've had so many great sponsors that I've had that have helped me so much. And opening that book and finding myself in that book was one of the greatest gifts that I cherish today. Because I know I'm an alcoholic. See, when I started going to that meeting, I wasn't sure if I was quite alcoholic or not, you know, because I still held on to that. I'm not going to be alcoholic like my dad. I have a lot of other problems. And it was just a little cooler to have those other problems than it was to be an alcoholic, you know. And so when I read the part where it says the first step is to concede to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic, that was an eye-opener for me, you know. And I had 7 years, and I was like, okay, I'm an alcoholic. This book tells me that I am. It tells me what happens when I take that first drink. And I had sponsorship to help me read that book because I couldn't read it by myself and understand it, you know. And because of the lifestyle that I lived, I used to suffer from really bad nightmares. You know, I used to kill people in my sleep, and there'd be blood all over the place. And that happened in real life, too. But I used to suffer from these nightmares. And when I told my sponsor, she said, Yvette, if you just stick with me and do these steps, these nightmares will stop. A lot of direction I'd gone I didn't want to take. You know, it's like, why would I do that? One of my first sponsors told me to start going to a step study. I'm like, what for? You know, I didn't understand it. Today I go to 2-step studies, you know, and I just didn't understand it. But when I found Alcoholics Anonymous and found someone that took me through the book to help me to understand it a little more, I knew I was home. I knew I was in a place where people understood me for the first time. And that's why I continue to go to my home group. I just had some really, really neat stuff happen to me in sobriety. I have my kids in my life. They invite me to their house. They let me stay in their house. And, you know, this from my oldest son that didn't want to come back and live with me. You know, he trusts me with his kids. You know, I get to have that relationship with my grandchildren that I just love. I walked through some things in sobriety that without the book and without a sponsor and without the steps, I don't think I would have made it. I found out that ex-husband that I had that I thought was, you know, my rock, did some things to, you know. And I felt ashamed of me because, you know, thinking I had my sons in a secure place and realizing I didn't, you know, this was just like 3-4 years ago. And I was devastated. When I found that out, I was devastated, and all I could do was go into a meeting and sit there and cry. And I said, this is the only place I know where to be, and I know where it's safe. And I sat there, and I cried through the whole meeting. And you know, the women in here show me how to love each other, you know. Show me that they can love me, and I can love them. And I've been working at the same place since I got sober. At a couple of years, I was with the company for like, I don't know, 8 years, 10 years. And I decided I need to start having a career because my body was breaking down. I'm getting older and I need to do something pretty quick here. And I started going to an adult center and taking phlebotomist, because I thought I'd be really good at drawing blood. This I could do. I can really do this good. And so I started going to school for it. And then the position that I'm in now came up at work, and it was posted. And for that loving guidance I had in these rooms, it's like, go for it. All they could do is say no. And I got the position. So the career that I have now started to surface, and I started, you know, to listen to other people, and they would be saying going back to school, and I was going to City College for a while for drug and alcohol, and I did that for 2 or 3 years, and then I stopped that, And I decided to get serious about the career I was in and that I was going to take the test to be an optician. And there's two tests. You have to take them with the Medical Board of California. And so I started studying for them. And when I started studying for them, I got very much in fear because, number one, I didn't believe in myself and I didn't believe I was smart enough to pass the test, but I was going to do it anyway. And so I paid for the test and I was like, okay, I got to do this. And I the first time I didn't pass it. I was like, oh my goodness. I'm the manager. I run the store that we're at, and it was very humbling to take that test and not pass it, you know, and I thought, oh, well, I'll just show them what you do, and then you pick yourself back up, and you go, you know, you start studying again, and the second time I passed the test, and there's two parts to the test. The first part is you get certified, and the second part is you get licensed with the state of California. To get licensed with the state of California, they do a background check. Oh, here's the fear again. You know, oh my goodness, I had to get a list of all my convictions, write details of everything that I had done, the outcome, everything. And this took some footwork, and it took getting over some fear, a lot of fear, you know, because, you know, I came in here feeling so worthless, you know, and not worthy of anything. And now I'm starting to believe in myself, and I was like, wow, this is like doing the fifth step with the sponsor. You know, I had to open myself up to somebody I didn't even know up in Sacramento. And, you know, there was not a lot of nice things in my background, you know. And if you were to look at those things, you would think that I was, you know, well, I was. Wow. And I just did it because that's what was suggested of me. Just do it. You don't know. And I was told, you know what? If it's meant to be, God will make it happen. I'm like, okay, that I can do. And so they got my application with my 5 pages of stuff. And also I wrote a letter and explained to them, please don't judge me by my past. This is how I used to live, and I don't live like that today. I went to a treatment center. I'm still involved in a 12-step program, and I told them what I do with people. I help people, and you know, it was just I really didn't think they were going to give me my license. And when I heard from the lady, she told me that I needed to get a letter from the treatment center I was in and a letter from my sponsor. I'm like, yes, a letter from my sponsor. That's going to be good. the treatment center couldn't write me a letter because I left the treatment center. So I got a letter from my sponsor, and she sent that out. And they gave me my license. Yeah. And I have both of them. So if you're new and you're thinking, how am I ever going to find a job? How am I ever going to support myself? You know, I had child support start taking half of my wages. God will help me through that one, you know. And you just do what's right in front of you and you believe in yourself and you be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, just coming to meetings isn't being a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. It does take some work. It does. And sometimes it takes doing things that you don't believe will ever, nothing will ever come of it. And you do it anyway. I did it anyway. And my life has drastically changed. I am not the person that I came in here with. I am very grateful of finding Alcoholics Anonymous and the women in here and the men. You know, I have friends in here. I have men friends in here. Now, I didn't know how to have relationships with men. I didn't, you know. I have a friend, I get to go to his shop and I get to discuss things with him. We get to figure out life. And we have fun doing it, you know. And I have a sponsor, and she shows up for me. Thank you. And thank you to the other women that were in my life and, you know, showed me how to do this. And I continue to learn. Am I out of time? I continue to learn and I continue to change because I continue to do Alcoholics Anonymous. I continue to come in these rooms and go to step studies and listen to my sponsor. And she was really taking care of me tonight because my idea is I'm going to get off work, take a shower, and come in here and go to the meeting. And she's like, no, we're going to go eat and we're going to go to the restaurant because I don't want you to hurry. We're going to come in here, you know. And, you know, that soft, gentle guidance that you don't get from men, you get it from women. I got it from women, you know. And, you know, it just, when I came in here, my prayer to God was, I just want to be happy and I just want to be sober and I don't know how. And I got so much more, you know. And it's just doing what's right in front of me and listening to you guys. And when I'm in my shit, I turn around and I help somebody else up. You know, I show up for somebody else. So thank you for listening to my story and allowing me to be here.